the issue of rape, domestic violence, sexual assault, which happens within the African American community, is an issue that we need to bring out of the closet.
In our segment Behind Closed Doors, we try to talk about things hidden in closets, difficult topics, and rape might be one of the hardest things to talk about. And it might be especially hard to talk about when the victims feel a need to protect, if not the perpetrators, then the community to which they belong. That's why filmmaker Aisha Shahida Simmons wanted to make her provocative new film titled No, the Rape Documentary. It's about black-on-black rape. Ms. Simmons joins us now from member station WWNO in New Orleans. Hello, Aisha, and welcome.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
This is a very heavy subject. It is not for the faint of heart. Why did you want to do this documentary?
Foremost, I'm a survivor of sexual assault, incest and rape, and I realized that there were so many women that I knew who were survivors. In fact, I know more survivors than I know who are not survivors. And I wanted to really break the silence, and because there was so much continuity around the reasons of the silence, of protecting the African-American community, protecting the perpetrators as a result of racism in our lives. And so I really felt that it was important to really talk about that silence.
Oh, wait a minute. But there are different opinions about that. Some people feel that what's past is past, and people perhaps should try to master the experience by not talking about it. So why do you feel that it's important to break the silence?
I think it's important because there's a man in John Dickerson at the Bluegrass Rape Crisis Center, who says that studies have shown that what takes a minute or 2 minutes can take years if they're doing therapy. So what we think sometimes, if we just bury it, it really comes out in forms of post-traumatic stress syndrome.
How did you convince the women to record their stories on such a personal issue?
I developed a relationship with them. It took me 11 years to make No. So a lot of the women who were initially kind of interested were nervous. I developed a relationship over the years. One of the women who's one of the featured survivors is my mother. So I've known her story all of my life. And she was, in fact, one of the first people who was very willing to tell her story.
He kept pressing the issue. And when I began to more forcefully say, no, please don't do that. I think you ought to leave. Then he became abusive and started really pushing me.
Did you know your mother's story? And why did you both decide that she should tell it?
I knew my mother's story because I come from a family of activists, and my mother was very involved in the civil rights movement in the 60s. And part of her stories and her stories that she used to always talk about was while fighting for racial liberation in this country, that she also was fighting for gender liberation within the African-American community. At the time when I heard these stories, particularly as a child and a teenager, I didn't think, oh, one day I'm going to make a film about this. But I know that that kind of laid the planet. She planted the seed for the need to just break all forms of silence. And at the time, she didn't talk about what happened to her in 1964 because there was this clear sense of racial solidarity. And also, she was assaulted in Mississippi in 1964. There was no going to the police if you're a black woman in Mississippi. Part of my legacy, part of my responsibility to break those silences and to for the community to really understand that to talk about this is not really being traitor to our community or our race. It's really about healing.
How difficult was it for your mother to talk about this?
It was very difficult for my mother to talk about it out of a need of protecting the civil rights movement. She was very concerned that she did not want the civil rights movement to be viewed in a bad light. I mean, the work, the groundbreaking work that she in concert with so many people did to really change the face of this country, it was so important. But she thought that it was really important at the same time to talk about the contradictions of what that meant, the work that they did and the sacrifices that so many women made for the sake of racial liberation. So it was very hard. I don't think that she would have done it had I not been her daughter. In fact, I know she wouldn't have.
There's a point at which you talk about how the black community responded to the allegations of rape by the beauty contestant, or the beauty pageant contestant, Desiree Washington, and the fighter Mike Tyson was subsequently indicted and actually went to jail in connection with those charges. And
yes.
Talk about that. Talk about how the community responded to this.
Oh, the community respect leaders of the community, black male leaders of the community, really threw Desiree to the wolves. I mean, their position was, what were you doing in this man's room at 2 a.m. in the morning, where you knew he had nothing other than sex on his mind, that you you knew exactly what was going to happen? And so it was like, how dare you accuse this man, this hero, this champion in our community? In fact, there's a line where Minister Farrakhan says, you know,
how many times, sisters, have you said no and you mean yes all the time? Wait, I'm talking to women now. We're gonna talk now. See, the day of the BS is all over. You're not dealing with a man that don't know you. And the damn deceitful games that you play.
And I think that that's just kind of this underlying line that, you know, black women are manipulative, go after high-profile men for their money, and that we want to make black men look bad in the eyes of society, in the eyes of mainstream popular culture and media.
But Aisha, let's talk about this for a minute, though. But what about where you have women expressing themselves in a very sort of overt sexual fashion? What do you say to those who would argue that, you know, women aren't taking enough responsibility for their own conduct, that you have women who are being very aggressive sexually themselves and then sometimes don't like the consequences of it and then use sort of allegations of coercion as a way to deal with their own ambivalence about their own conduct? What would you say to that?
Well, I would use a quote that Loretta Ross says in No, is that, you know, bad conduct, poor judgment, the penalty for any of that should never, ever be rape. I mean, if I'm standing outside late at night in the middle of a drug-infested neighborhood with a wad of money, if somebody steals my money, somebody would clearly, people have the right to say, Aisha was stupid. What were you doing out there with that wad of money? But I could still press charges. If I leave anything in my car and that door unlocked and somebody steals any of that from that car, they're a thief. So yes, I think that we need to have discussions about responsibility and poor judgment, but rape and violence should never, ever be the, you know, the penalty for that. And I think that that's what I believe and hope that No really encourages people to start rethinking.
Your mother's story dates from the 60s, and the Desiree Washington, Mike Tyson case happened in 1991. Do you think that anything's changed since then?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. I don't think that a lot has changed since then. I mean, what I will say has changed is that there are more and more women who are speaking out. There are more resources that are looking at violence against women as it pertains to black women, but just period. So I think that that's what's changed.
But the whole concept of, if you speak up for yourself, that if you as an African-American woman wish to be heard or wish to not accept your victimization, and the person who victimized you, the person who raped you, is a black man, and in the interest of racial solidarity, you know, the idea is you should keep your mouth shut. Do you think that attitude has changed?
I don't think so, no, because we can look at the what was going on with R. Kelly in terms of the young women who he was accused of molesting or having sex with, actually. And so, I mean, and the response from members of the African American community was, well, first of all, that they didn't look as young as they're supposed to be. That was one response. But the other one was that R. Kelly is innocent. So I think that there's very much still this sense of that for the sake of the community, which really means for the sake of black men, that we must be silent. We have to protect them. And then if we do come forward, then we're lying.
What do you want to happen as a result of people viewing this film?
Within the African-American community, I really want us as a community to start thinking about sexual violence and the way in which we think about police brutality and the way in which we think about racial profiling, that I like for sexual violence to be a part of our national agenda, ending it. Within just beyond the African-American community, I think that it's really important that when we think about faces of victim survivors of sexual assault, that in addition to white women, that we think about black women, Asian women, Latina women, Native American women, that we really understand that rape and sexual assault is something that that knows no racial boundaries, and that it impacts all of us, regardless of if we've been sexually assaulted or not. It impacts all of us.
Filmmaker Aisha Shahida Simmons joined us from WWNO in New Orleans. Her film, No, the Rape Documentary, is available on DVD. For more information about the film, you can visit our website at npr.org/tellmemore. Aisha, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Michelle.